I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our freelance journalist Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and author Arsalan Iftikhar. Kevin Blackistone is a sports writer and professor of journalism. And new to the shop today, Justin Vaughn. He is an assistant professor of political science at Cleveland State University, but everybody happens to be in Washington, D.C., so... How awesome is that, Jimmy?
How awesome is that? Thank you for Michelle. Thank you for that, Michelle. JV.
What's up?
Hometown. What's up? Good to have you. And from my college. You
That's
got
right.
the twofer. You're the man. All right, well, you know what? Let's get things started. The latest dust up in the social media world is actress Gwyneth Paltrow tweeting the N-word. Well, kinda. Let me explain this one. See, Gwyneth apparently tweeted a photo from a Jay-Z and Kanye West concert in Paris last week. She tweeted, N-words in Paris, for real. Well, you know, the N-word was written with letters and characters, so she didn't actually write it out. But some people are having a hard time with this. It reignited the debate about whether it's ever appropriate for white people to use the term. I'm sure my grandfather would have had something to say about this. But, you know, comedian Chris Rock has some advice for us about this a while back. Michelle, we got a clip, yeah?
We do. And also, you know, N-Words in Paris is actually the name of Kanye's and Jay-Z's
right. not, not
song.
For nothing.
So there
right.
is the not for nothing. But to your point, this is from a comedy skit. Chris Rock says, you must check the Dr. Dre rules with your black friends. Here's a clip.
What are the rules when a Dr. Dre song comes on the radio or plays at a club? What is the procedure that goes into effect? Because sometimes I'm with my white friends and the Dr. Dre song will come on. And there's a lot of niggas in a Dr. Dre song. And they want to enjoy it, but they can't really enjoy it around me.
Protocol. Wow. What's the protocol? What's the protocol, Jimmy?
It's got to be in the song.
Well,
it's got to be in the song.
Right. Well, thanks for that, Michelle. Chris Rock says it's sometimes okay for white people to say it in the lyrics of the song, which is kind of what Gwyneth Paltrow was doing. But let me just tell you something. You know, because I guess there are black people running around giving white people permission to use the word. And let me just say this, white people, because I love you but more than they do, apparently. If you're running around, if somebody gives you permission to use that word, they do not like you very much. They are setting you up to be a YouTube video. They are running behind you with a flip cam
exactly.
at the ready, because you are going to make history, my friend. You are about to go viral. You're about to get internet wasted real quick. You are about to be the next big meme. You know, that's real talk. JV, Justin Vaughn, you want to chime in here?
I read today. Today is Kanye's birthday, so I feel like this is a particularly important topic for this afternoon.
okay.
I would like to say, just don't say it, right? Don't say the word. Don't quote it. Don't lip sync it. Don't tweet it with asterisks. Just don't use it.
But right? why not? It's English.
It is English, but there's a lot of things that are English. And, you know, it doesn't matter what your intent is, and I'm sure that there was no ill intent in this. In fact, probably the opposite. But once it comes out of your mouth, the intent's gone, right? And you lose control about how people are going to feel about it. And not just a few people are going to be offended, but, you know, huge numbers of people are going to be seriously upset and hurt by what you may be saying. And you got to know at this point in American history that that's a likely result.
I agree with that. Thank you. As our resident white guy in the shop, thank you for putting it down like that. KB, Kevin Blackistone.
I didn't know you had a name tag that said resident white guy in the shop.
I look at it like having a gun. It's like, you know, you can use a gun, but it's dangerous depending on how you use it. If you don't know how to use it, you're going to hurt somebody and it might be yourself.
Well, you know, maybe use it in an academic setting.
Really?
Maybe use it as Randall Kennedy did when he wrote his book, which is an etymology of the word.
Right.
But you know what? You want to talk about etiquette? Gwyneth Paltrow would learn the etiquette, as you suggested. You know, it's one thing to tweet it out with your friends. It's another thing if she was riding the Green Line here in D.C. and got off at the MLK station down in Southeast and called some sister who was sitting in front
Ooh.
Of her. That same word.
So then she would learn really
exactly.
Quick.
Then she would learn the etiquette of the use of the word.
Well, I don't think she would do that though. But it's
you
fact
never
is,
know.
It has been. But you know, Arsalan, I don't know what you think. You know, I was interested in your take on this because you know, speaking of Randy Kennedy's book about the N word, and maybe we could suspend any further use of it here today. We just use the euphemism. I think that'll be good to do. It was actually used as a defense in a case where a person was being prosecuted for a hate crime, used the word. Right.
Right.
And then use that as a defense saying, we hear it on the radio all the time. What's the issue?
Well, and actually, I think that probably from a legal vantage point did more to undermine a defense, because when it comes to bias-motivated crimes, you have to show, in addition to a physical assault or whatever other criminal act, that there was some sort of bias motivation. So whether it's, you know, a homophobic slur before beating up somebody who they perceive to be of the LGBT community, similarly, yeah. I think that would undermine his or her defense. I think here, for me, when I first heard the story, the first thing that came to mind to me was Gwyneth Paltrow was trying so hard to be a baller here, and it just landed completely flat.
Yeah. I mean, right. She's trying to get some street cred. Yeah, I mean, what street is that?
The only baller in her family is her husband, Chris Martin of Coldplay.
Right.
Again, I think it is a little disingenuous when people say that she used the N-word. She didn't use it. She was, whether tone deaf or not, she was quoting the title of a song to try to be a baller, and it completely fell flat. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
But why is it when you use asterisks or when we all use the word N-word, why is that not saying it? Everybody knows what you're saying.
The euphemism is
become just as bad.
You know what it is? Yeah. I think, and this is something, although I know Bakari Kitswana, he talked about in his book how, you know, white kids have taken on hip-hop and it's been great. But see, I think one of the byproducts is that white kids really believe that they can use this word, you know, but you haven't earned the right to use this word. Proximity does not give you permission, doesn't give you membership. But like for instance, I worked in the gay community for 4 years. I was a DJ. But if I ever formed my mouth to drop the D word or the F word, I got snapped up really quickly.
Why would you want to?
I thought I was among family. I thought I was among friends. They were like, They were like, no, you don't have any right to use that. That's not your word.
But the problem is she has been given license by people like Russell Simmons, who then goes out and writes a defense of her for using the word.
That's the problem.
I'm more concerned about him and less concerned about Gwyneth Paltrow, because he really doesn't understand. He doesn't really understand the situation.
He doesn't understand much. No. Let's just put that out there.
Do you think that there's kind of an elite kind of group think here, which is, well, we're all famous elite friends, and so therefore we can use this word, because if the word is never going to be directed against me in a context in which I'm actually going to be harmed or hurt.
Exactly.
Or hurt, right?
I think you're exactly correct.
They don't let me in the Louis Vuitton store at closing time. Right. It's all good. My personal assistant will go the next day and hook me up, you know, that kind of thing. You think that's that part of it?
I think that is part of it. And I also think the other part of it is that you got people like Jay-Z and Russell Simmons who have commercialized and monetized the word.
Huh. You know, it's interesting because, women, can I just throw this a little bit? Women, I find, sometimes use this word with each other in a certain context. And I've, on occasion, had to check someone for saying, maybe you call your friends that, but you don't call me that. But I've never had a real friend ever use that word with me, right? Somebody who was really a friend. Because if somebody was really my friend, then they would know that I don't think that's you're not going to call. But, you see what I'm saying? So I wonder if this is also kind of a part of the fact that these really aren't real friends.
Well, but
because
I also,
real friends really know how they really feel.
But I also think it's interesting that black people over time, particularly the generation we're living in now, have appropriated a very ugly slur and turned it into this kind of debate where you can use it sometimes as a weapon and other times you can use it in friendship. Maybe not in our generation, but in their generation.
Well, but doesn't every group do that?
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't every group have words that they use with each other? Knucklehead or whatever.
Well, yeah. For example, my parents are originally from Pakistan, right? Yeah. And so a lot of my friends will throw around the term Paki. But the term Paki in the United Kingdom is essentially the moral equivalent of the N-word.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when my friends, throw that around, I tell them to slow their roll. So, I mean, this is not just exclusive to the African American.
You know what it is? It's kind of a false sense of intimacy. Like when I thought I was in. I thought these were people. I mean, because I'd known them for years and I loved them. And I thought I had the right to use this F and this D. Where they were like, we love you too, but you haven't earned the right to use that word. You are not of this community. That word does not belong to you. You know, and if you really loved us, you would respect that and not use it. So, like that.
That's interesting. All right. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with freelance journalist Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, sports writer and journalist and professor Kevin Blackstone, and political science professor Justin Vaughn. And it's too bad you all are so shy today. Nobody wants to say how they really feel. It's so sad. I'm going to maybe bring you out. More Red Bull. Jimmy.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Well, we're going to drop the L word. LeBron James. Looked like he was on the ropes the other night, but his team is heating up. No puns intended. Arsalan.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you made it in today after your beloved Celtics got blown out by the Miami Heat. Oh, man. My condolences. But
no, you don't. You don't care.
Don't condole anything, man. We got a game 7 on Saturday night. And yes, you know, LeBron James and the Miami Cavaliers took game 6 against the Boston Celtics. But you know what? Nobody gave my Celtics a chance. Michelle Martin. First it was going to be Miami in a sweep, then 5 games, then 6 games. Anything can happen in a game 7. And when you have people like, you know, KG and Rondo, anything can happen on Saturday night. It should be a great game 7. And although I think the ballers of Oklahoma City are probably going to run over anyone from the East, you know, the ability.
Notice how he's like walking
it back. The mere prospect
tape
of being.
Tape is a beautiful thing, my brother. Tape is a beautiful thing.
The prospect of taking out Miami in Miami would be merely priceless.
And will not. Occur. Kevin, this is your thing.
Well, I mean, you know, LeBron just affirmed for anyone who knows how great of a player he is that he's a great player. I mean, it's just that was a miraculous performance by him last night. I mean, think about what he did, right? He scored 30 points in the first half on the road in a closeout playoff game against the best defense in the league. They could not stop him. I mean, that's amazing. Unfortunately, LeBron James is a classic case of the villainized black athlete. And, you know, unless and until he can win a championship, there will always be people who will be throwing stones at him simply because of the way that he left your beloved town, Cleveland.
This and he's a chokester.
Stop.
Justin Fulmer,
we'll
go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier today. But when I was a kid, my little brother used to like dinosaurs, and I never really understood it, right? But LeBron James has finally made me like some dinosaurs up in Boston.
Yeah.
These dudes are old, but, you know, they're getting it done. They're getting it done, and I'm cheering for
them. You're still hating on LeBron, though.
Oh, man.
This is more anti-LeBron than it is pro-Celtics. Come on.
Yeah,
why is that? I'm sorry.
I'm pro-LeBron. I'm pro-LeBron. I just don't think he can finish. I just don't think he's a finisher.
And that's the other thing I was going to say. You know, LeBron played a great game last night. LeBron's one of the best basketball players of all time. However, we know it was game 6 and not game 7 because he showed up, right?
Ooh.
Game seven, when it's clinch time, LeBron's going to go take a nap or something.
If he was still wearing the Cavs, would you be saying that?
You know,
this is just rejection speaking. I mean, let's just be real.
You're probably right.
I'm gonna push back on that and say no. Ahead. I mean, because he demonstrated in Cleveland time after time, like at the point he's indecisive, he chokes under pressure. Word to Scott Rabb. And that's unfortunate.
And remember, when he was wearing a Cleveland Cavaliers jersey, it was my beloved Boston Celtics that ended his tenure there when he didn't show up in Game 5 in Boston Garden.
Well, the chemistry is, I think it's a different team. It's a different context. And I think that I'll be equally excited if the Thunder win. I think that Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals was one of the best games ever. It was certainly the best game of the series in my humble opinion. But I think that one of the things that just irritates me is that this is supposed to be a society where people own their own labor. He chose to take his labor which he had every right to do, to a place where he could, and he in fact took less money to play with people that he wanted to play with because he thought that he would enjoy it more for whatever reason. And I just get irritated with people hating on him because he did what he has a right to do. I mean, you know, if any other corporate entity, you know, moves to a different, you know, state, you know, because for whatever thing, the conditions are better. People don't like spending the rest of their lives hating them, unless, of course, it's the Cleveland Browns. I'm sorry, but
Michelle, there's nobody here that would deny the fact that he had every right to go to Miami. But you know, with the debacle of the decision, then the stupid pep rally that they had, where he said not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven. You know, that really left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths who loved LeBron when he was in Cleveland. I loved LeBron when he was in Cleveland because he was the proverbial underdog. And now he basically colluded with two out of the best top 10 players in the league to form, you know, this little triumph.
Colluded? How about agreed? How about they're his friends and he wants to play with them? Mm-hmm. I mean, are we colluding because this is the group that we like talking to each other and we invite you all in? Is that collusion?
We just open
the door and walk in whoever.
Perception is reality.
Well, and also, the other thing is, and I guess I know, for some reason, I'm the only person who ever brings this up. These are still very young people, you know. They are very young people. In any other field, they would be at the beginning of their career and they'd be supervised by grown-ups. It is only in athletics that these young, very young people are multinational corporations or multi-million-dollar corporations in their own right and operate with very little kind of supervision in terms of the other aspects of their lives. And he's a very young person. And I mean, if you had a 26-year-old, you know, associate at a law firm who said something lame, you would be like, oh, whatever, sit down, son.
He's been there for nine years, though. Now.
So what? He started when he was like 15. So what?
Well, you can't tell from his hairline. It's definitely.
I know, right?
Yeah. Hater. Hater, hater. Somebody's going to be buying me a Starbucks next week.
Well.
Maybe three.
Hey, now.
Love y'all. Maybe four. I don't know. Hey, before we let you go, what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about that? Did you know that Justin Combs, Sean Diddy Combs, a mega rich hip hopper's son, Justin Combs, was awarded a merit based athletic scholarship to UCLA? And some people are like, what?
I know,
What's wrong with that?
Well, yeah, why not? Was he supposed to get a rap career? Well, applaud this kid.
We have two professors in the house. I'm just wondering.
Applaud this kid for going to college, you know, and he earned it, you know. All you haters out there, so what if his dad's rich?
Absolutely.
He earned it.
And this kid was a 3.75 GPA, star cornerback. You know, so what that he's driving a $300,000 Maybach? You keep pimping.
And I think that's remember wrong. That, I think the Maybach should stay in the garage.
Justin, what do you think?
No. You work at a state university. A lot of people are saying, state university, what? We could use that money. Come on, let him write a check. What do you say?
You know, they got a $54,000 scholarship to give to the best athlete that they can recruit for that team. And I think Justin Combs qualifies for that.
Yep.
And you don't have to recruit the best poor athlete. You don't have to recruit the best middle-class athlete. You get the best athlete you can get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kevin, yes?
It's earned. I mean, it's awarded based on athletic and academic success, and he meets that criteria. And you know what? It's probably a good thing for UCLA in terms of finances because they can get money from the
free
parents.
Publicity.
Let's hope. Yeah, let's hope. Or sell the car. Kevin Blackstone is a sports columnist and professor of journalism at the University of Maryland. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, founder of TheMuslimGuy.com, and Justin Vaughn, assistant political science professor at Cleveland State University, all here in Washington, D.C. Thank you, gentlemen.
Peace.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.